Okay, everybody's admitted. The room is disabled. Over to you, Dwayne.
Excellent. Thank you, BU. Michael and Rose, I want to.
Like Michael and Rose are lucky to have someone who appreciates them.
I would like to thank Tulia and the Moya University the opportunity to share some of these key insights that the Tibetan and Blavatsky and others have shared. And of course, our techie people, organizers, BL, Rose, Mikey, and many others. And of course, I would like to thank all of you for coming and changing your busy schedule to participate in this group work. So let's just quickly outline what we would like to do. And if my sound is not sufficient, just let me know. I've had a few audio problems. Seems to be good now. If all of you recall, we left our previous discussion on the development of our inner personal geometry and the electrical makeup of the inner bodies. And after a brief recapitulation on that subject, I would like to expand it and approach the same subject from a larger and more macrocosmic angle. And part of that will be revealing the alliance between esoteric astrology and mystical geometry on a planetary level. Students of the Ageless Wisdom teachings often ask what will be the next wave of these teachings. And I make no personal claims, but several quotes by the Tibetan master will give us some clues as to where some of these new esoteric teachings may emerge. Okay, so getting back to our personal egoic alignment in geometric form, we have this wonderful quotation by the Tibetan. Is there anyone in the group who would like to read that for us?
I'll try.
I will,
Thank
Dwayne,
you.
if you don't want to, BL.
Yeah, I can hardly hear you, Rose. I hope everybody can hear me fine.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
All right. That was a little better, Rose, but okay, I'll do it. Egoic alignment and geometry. This morning, I would touch on the matter of egoic alignment again, showing you, under the law of correspondences, universal application. It lies based in geometry or in figures and numbers. Each life that the personality leads is, at the close, represented by some geometrical figure, some utilization of the lines of the cube, and their demonstration is a form of some kind. Intricate and uncertain in outline and crude in design are the forms of the earlier lives. That's from Letters on Occult Meditation 6.
Excellent. Thank you, BL. For those here who have studied feng shui, they know that the arrangements of things, even in your home or where you live, can have a power effect on the way the energies are moving. So this idea of each person having some unique geometric form can also be applied to other areas. Now, there's many different schools of feng shui, but the idea of controlling and opening the energy flow into your home, into the rooms in which you work, even your computer setup. Do you have a flower on the window in a vase? Do you have a poster over here? This may seem very, very oversimplified, but it does demonstrate that when you study the Asian and Oriental philosophies and esoteric systems, that it applies right down to the material realm. Okay, excellent. Thank you again, BL. Now, we have to keep in mind that when DK says some utilization of the lines of the cube, that is the foundation for all work with triangles. Because when you bisect the cube by creating a diagonal line from one corner to another, the upper and lower corner, you end up with two triangles, which have, according to the occult teachings, many times the potency of the original cube. And we also have to keep into consideration that the cube relates more to personality integration and development, which is very important, but the triangle relates more to the development of love and the consciousness aspect. Is there anyone else that would like to read this next quote by the Tibetan?
Wayne, I could read if you like.
Please, thank you.
Okay. When he steps upon the path of discipleship, the purpose consists in merging all these many lines into one line, and gradually this consummation is achieved. The six-pointed star becomes the five-pointed star, the cube becomes the triangle, and the triangle becomes the one. Whilst the one, at the end of the greater cycle, becomes the point in the circle of manifestation. Letters of occult meditation six.
Excellent. Thank you, Francis.
Reminding me that the teachings once said that the universe is a series of ascending and descending triangles.
Well, that is a perfect example and description, Francis, of the Sri Yantra. And I have demonstrated the power of that when set in motion, where you have like a blinding point of light, and then out of that emerges a series of triangles, but they're in a sequential order, even though the whole organism itself is one. And this, of course, is one of the paradoxes of the occult path. You can separate and delineate and get many insights from that, but only when you're able to pull it back into a synthesis of energies moving and rotating, do you see the big picture? I would say that this image that you're looking at is very powerful. And it's not because I am some great artist, but simply I, to the best of my ability, put together some of those key thoughts. Now, this image was originally used for several other purposes. So it has at the bottom the sinuous snake of the Kundalini. And you'll notice that the gem at the very bottom is green, indicating that when all of these higher things that the Tibetan has just outlined with all their unique geometry is unfolding, you will be getting a movement of the Kundalini up through the centers. subtly at first, but then climaxing at the third initiation, where one becomes soul infused, and in the early stages of the third, and then the full disintegration of the causal body or the egoic lotus at the end of the third initiation. So it's a great image to have that you can have access to. And I would simply point out that the Sanskrit in gold is the Om Mani Padme Haum. And that may not be correct. I just put it in there because that was the best that I could come up with to sort of finish this particular image.
Thank you, Duane. As you're speaking, you're motivating me to stare at the Sri Yantra poster right in front of my computer here.
Ah, excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Michael Stacy, would you be kind enough to read this next quote?
Absolutely. These triangles must be regarded as in rapid movement. I wonder if you can grasp at least partially and symbolically the fact that these triangles must not be thought of as placed, static, and eternally the same, or even as three-dimensional. They must be regarded as in rapid movement, revolving eternally in space and ceaselessly moving onward, and as a fourth and fifth dimensional extension. There is no way of depicting them or of bringing them visually to your attention, for only the inner eye of vision can imagine their progression, position, or appearance. Therefore, the entire cosmic web and solar system is an intricate, constantly moving, interwoven series of triangles, wherein each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy, nine in all. It is likewise responsive to and receptive of the energies, likewise triple in nature, which lie within its periphery or sphere of influence and vibratory activity.
Excellent, Michael. Thank you. I like the passage where the Tibetan says, there is no way of depicting them or bringing them visually to your attention, for only the inner eye of vision can imagine their progression, position, or appearance. And at that time, historically, there was not the aids, the audio visual aids that we now have. So even though I think the Tibetan is referring to the inner eye of, let's say, clairvoyance or clairaudience on the high mental plane, we do have the benefit of seeing animations that can be instructive and useful to get just a sense of maybe what he's referring to. So in the next animation, I want to show visually how the one becomes the three and the three becomes the nine. In other words, the fohat or pure abstraction, it creates a trinity. And out of that trinity, you have a series of triangles that go on infinitely from the highest recesses of the cosmic planes down to science in their discovery of DNA and all these interesting revelations around atomic energy and force. They're all based on some type of triangles. So let me demonstrate that, and then we'll talk about it a little further. Excellent. In that short video, you can see sort of a triangle and then three other triangles emerging in sort of a static in linear way. And then in the next image, it's more multidimensional. And then at the very end, you have triangles that are very organic and free-flowing. So all of those stages lead up to the next video that we're going to watch that takes it to a whole new level. And even though it may be difficult for the observer to discern that everything here is based on triangles, you can see all of the platonic solids that we studied last session in motion. They appear, they disappear, and it happens often so quickly it's hard to like nail it down. But just use this as a meditation. Take a deep breath, relax, and just imagine this is the constitution of the universe on the inner planes. This is, in a reflected way, the constitution of a group. This group, you individually, all of your centers are sequentially and systematically activated during each initiation. In the triangle that was earlier activated, it doesn't disappear. It becomes what DK called a base note. And then the other more dynamic ones take its place. So take a deep breath, relax, and really just breathe into this next animation. Excellent. That animation was done by Mike Vos Kakis, spelled Kakis. And if anybody wanted to research, they could come up with probably a lot of other additional beautiful renditions of organic geometry. And again, without being too redundant, if when we look at images of this type and we can see how our geometry is not just important individually and its progression to more rarefied forms, more ethereal lights, because all geometry is made out of light. But that you are an intricate and important part of the group mosaic. That the group Antikorana bridge, which we have indicated as threads, cables, vortices, you can clearly see it here with all these triangles. And you can also see the square in this. I overlooked that in my eagerness to share the video. Okay. Now, As I mentioned when we opened this presentation, one of the most important questions that the advanced disciple is continuously asking is, where are these new teachings coming from? Are they going to be so new we wouldn't recognize them if they were right in our face? Or do they emerge out of the old, or combinations of the both? And here's a case where, in the study of astrology, we're all familiar with the importance esoterically of the sun sign. And we have it sort of listing, have it listed here. One, the sun sign integrates the personality and prepares it for the full descent of the soul. And the rising sign indicates where the person will find their soul link or alignment. And that rising sign must dominate the sun sign. But again, like I just shared with the idea of geometry, the sun sign doesn't disappear. It becomes a foundational base or light or geometric form for the rising sign, which now really grips, to use a key word of the Tibetans, of that personality and puts it in its rightful place. It does not destroy the personality, which is a common misnomer. It puts the personality, the lower mind, the emotional nature, and the physical fear, which are now purified, it puts them in their proper place. Now we come to what is, in my understanding, one of the important insights into what's coming. The Tibetan had these triple sun meditations that he gave out privately, and they were not published until after AAB transited to the other side. And if I remember correctly, chronologically, they really weren't made public until the School of Esoteric Studies, John Cobb, made them public in 1999 or right in there. And then once a few disciples got those teachings, they sort of went exponential. And now a lot of people have them. But one of the best sources of insights into the triple sun meditation, which leads to full monadic awareness, can be found at Walter Poulin's Astrolab site. And he has generously shared those links with us, so that should we want to do more research, and I strongly recommend it, he has here two separate links. And is Walter with us today, or Jessica?
No, okay. I believe they're in Finland, actually.
So. Oh, that's right, of course. Anyway, he has put together in his astrolog a number of ways of anticipating what your chart would be if you just feed the information into it. And then the bottom link, I think, is the 2017 SRI, Esoteric Astrology Pre-Conference, where he again generously shares that with us. And I highly recommend that, because he goes through the importance of it and he makes links to where this information can be found. He's not just talking about it, he's going directly to the source, DK's original statements. Okay, are there any questions up to this point?
Yes, Nisa has her hand up. Go ahead, please, Nisa.
Well, you know, you were talking about would we know things the new, because they might be in our face. And I would put forth that possibly change of us, of what's around us, our common, what we call common knowledge, it really changes. It's like two things that come to mind are physically the planet's pole. You know, the magnetic pole is shifting gradually. Would I notice if, as a baby, I, you know, had an experience of where the pole was and where the pole is suddenly right now? If that was a jump, would I notice it? And like the ocean's rising, it. When I go to the ocean, it always looks the same. You know, you couldn't prove it by me. So, and it's life is sneaky like that. Everything, everything's, isn't it? Everything
It
is
is.
changing while, you know, and so I think, yeah, it could be right in your face and you wouldn't know it very easily.
These are very important insights. And I recall the Tibetan making the remark that students in early discipleship. People often think, oh, if I just study and meditate and serve, then one day the clouds are going to roll back and there's going to be this lightning bolt that comes from above and strikes me, and I'm going to know these higher truths. And I would not say that cannot happen because it can. But the Tibetan follows that generic statement with the idea that actually what really happens the majority of the time is that the disciple is inching forward in such small increments that they don't recognize their progress. They become their own worst critics, thereby actually paradoxically slowing the whole progression down. And so, what you have shared, Lisa, is I am in total agreement. And I think these new teachings are going to be affecting the whole planet, the ecology, the shifting of the planet, its poles. So thank you. Okay, any additional comments?
Yes, let me read this from Francis and then we have another hand up. Francis says, it all starts with the one I, the one life, which becomes the three, the Trinity, then the nine, which is divine.
Yes. You'll notice in the opening visual image that I always use, and the one with the dove fluttering when you first open and connect in, it has the numbers 999 underneath the Christ, and it's like the cosmic Christ and perfection on one of the highest possible levels. Thank you, Francis. That's excellent. Okay, any
And then
additional?
Sanjay has his hand up, and I see your comment there about the links. You will get the PDF. It's already in there right now, which should have the links, but I'll go try and pull them out right now so I can put them in there so you can see the links, okay? But go ahead.
Oh,
You
that
had a
would be
question
excellent.
before? You had a question
Yes,
before you
thank
put
you.
that?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That covers my point. Thank you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you,
That's
Sanja.
all I see then, so let me go pull those out and put them in the chat.
And I would also say, while we're waiting before the next share or the next question, that the new teachings are going to be influenced by sound. And what the Tibetan refers to when he says that is mantra, or what is also called nada yoga. in some of the Tibetan or Hindu traditions. And it's the recognition, not just of your own geometry, but that you have unique notes with your physical, etheric, astral, mental, soul, monadic, and that meditations in the future will incorporate that. They will incorporate your geometry. They will incorporate your rays, their coloring, their notes, and also advanced breathing exercises. The science of the centers. DK is affirmed and reaffirmed so many times that the whole occult hierarchy and paradigm is based on something very simple. And he says it's the microcosmic recognizing the macrocosmic, or we as personalities being the microcosm. Not, must build these bridges, these antahkarana bridges through color, sound, vibration, and geometry to where the real geometry is. This is what we are, is important and as sacred as it is a dim reflection of what's taking place on the soul and the monadic level. Okay, any additional comments?
No, that's all I see right now. And Michael shared those links. And again, you guys will be given copies of the slides so you can get the links from them later too.
I have mentioned there is an alliance between esoteric astrology and of mystical geometry. But I wanted to share with the group the full quote. And would somebody like to read this for us?
Asha, go ahead, please. We can't hear you, Asha. Asha, were you going to read that?
She may be muted,
She
or
is, I can't.
she may have her hand raised for something she wanted to share. Either way, Asha, you can connect in another slide.
We just lost our audio, so
Okay. So someone else like to read this?
I
Okay.
can read again.
Thank
Okay,
you.
thanks, Michael.
When therefore the esoteric side of astrology and of mystical geometry has been studied, and alliance has been made between these two sciences, a flood of light will be thrown upon this matter of the intelligent principle. When the inner workings of the law of cause and effect, the law whereby the Dipika lords govern all their action, is better comprehended, then and then only will the sons of men be able to study with profit the place of Manas in the evolutionary scheme. At the present time, it is not possible to do more than point out the direction of the path which must be trodden before this abstruse matter can be made clear, and to indicate certain lines of investigation which might, if strenuously and scientifically followed, yield to the student a rich reward of knowledge. Until the intuition is better developed in the average man, the very principle of Manas itself forms a barrier to its due understanding.
Thank you, Michael. Excellent. This whole quote is profound, but I find the last sentence just off the charts because it presents graphically, clearly to the student that until the intuition is developed, the very principle of Manas forms a barrier to its due understanding. So we have to understand that the mental plane has seven subplanes, and that most of humanity is operating on the three lower. The fourth is transitional, and it's where DK says you become the aspirant to the mysteries. And the three higher subplanes are not in any way like the three lower subplanes. They are actually the three subplanes that allow you to enter into the soul body, which is will, love, and intelligence. Well, that intelligent aspect of the soul is the three higher subplanes of the mental. So we need the foundation of the lower subplanes. And this is why when you look at the panorama of the Tibetans' teachings or Blavatsky or many other masters and initiates, you have to understand that that was their long-term goal. That it's not to overwhelm the student with minutiae and tidbits of information. No, it's simply to lay a foundation, and that the student, through meditation, alignment, visualization, the creation of the vortex, the inner sphere, their inner geometry, light color, all the things that we're constantly harping on, is there to take the student to those three higher subplanes. Because we're in the fourth round of the fifth root race. I'm not sure if that's correct, but I do know that the fifth ray is coming into its full power for a number of different reasons. And when you look out at the world and you see the terrible things that are happening through the use of these lower subplanes of the mind, it's easy to say, oh man, I got to get off the mental plane. I got to, you know, all these brutal people that are just wrecking the planet. They're third rayers, chain rayers, moon chainers, and they're lost in the lower subplanes of the mental. But when the intuition awakens, the lower mind takes its rightful place as an interpreting agent and no longer the boss. So that is a tricky, tricky thing. And only the disciple will know when they've got enough information to now apply that in their meditation to awaken more of the intuition or the heart. So that is, and I'm reminded, excuse me, just one last thing. I'm reminded of HPB, who said, if you don't want to deal with paradoxes, you don't want to be a part of the ageless wisdom teachings, because you will be consistently confronted with something that can be this way at one time, and then at another time, it can be different. And then if that's not confusing enough to the lower mind, it can be both of those at the same time. Okay, sorry to hop on this. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to backtrack a little and put some of this in what I hope is perspective, okay? You know, we're a mental race. That's what we're supposed to be developing. And part of the developing the lower mental is integrating our three lower bodies into that personality, which can, of course, be good, bad, or very ugly. All right. But keep in mind, with all those personalities that are out there in your face right now, doing some of the very ugly, that is a step up in evolution for them. But as Duane said, we have to rise from the lower mental to the higher mental. That's that first antikarana, to bridge that through the intuition and reach the soul and help the soul become soul infused. And part of that gets back to that triple sun that we were just looking at and that Walter explains so well and shows us and gives us opportunities for it, okay? And in that, what I mean is, in esoteric astrology, we not only acknowledge the physical sun and how that is our personality, but we also notice the point opposite as the earth. And at the lower levels, that can be our dharma, it can be our path, okay? But as part of the triple sun, it represents our path to the monad. And part of the way of doing that is to recognize that point of opposites, the sun and the earth, those signs, the houses that they're in, and learn to balance that opposition and learn to work from the narrow razor edge point in the middle of that, so that we recognize I'm a Leo sun and I recognize and work with that Aquarian energy of my earth point. And that's what I'm reaching for as I become soul infused, as I awaken my triad, my spiritual triad, and as I reach towards that triple sun of the monadic energy that I can just barely begin to feel in the lower realms as I awaken to that service aspect of my Aquarian earth. So it's all part and parcel of the same thing as we advance, as we develop that personality, as we develop that personality correctly, as we soul infuse that personality, as we awaken to, the first anacharana is from the lower mind to the higher mind. The second part of that anacharana is from the, to the spiritual triad, to all three levels of that spiritual triad. And that then takes us to the monad. So anyway, I just wanted to add that. I hope that it adds to
Excellent,
what you're
excellent, BA,
saying.
BL. You've filled in a lot of blanks
And
that
that raised a whole bunch of hands.
excellent. Who's next?
Okay, Nisa, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, when like you were saying, BL, reaching forward, it seems to me that we are becoming something that we can't even think of. My understanding is that at one time we were struggling with hatha yoga to come under control of our bodily processes to the point where here and now it's unthinkable, but that our heart, we don't have to pay attention to our heart. To all the things that physiologically go on, that at some point in the distant past, we had to consciously gain control of. And I think we're in a point, probably we're always in a point, but we're in a point now we're becoming consciously striving, like you said, striving forward, becoming aware and awakening to the something that we can't even begin to understand what it will be like. And you were talking about sound. I seem to remember somewhere where DK mentions coming under control of fire. Like, it to me it interpreted that at some point we would, be able to suppress fire with sound. But as you were talking, the sound that we utter, it just seems like we will be a different species. We will be in control of what we think of as, cities, and that they are these powers, but that they will just be these low things that, we don't even think about. Like, we don't think about our heart beating or, a wound that we is cut. It just heals. We don't consciously do anything, really. I mean, the body just does it. And I think that a lot of what we struggle with now is going to be somehow, we're just going to be so different, like a butterfly coming out of the mush,
Excellent. Excellent, Shia Nisa. Thank you. I'm reminded of a passage from Rumi who said, "Oh, if only somebody told me it was going to be like this." And then he stops and he says, "But how could anyone tell you the majesty, the beauty, the creativity of God, or the initiatory experience?" And it's a very, very difficult thing to anticipate the future. And yet, paradoxically, energy follows thought. The moment you start to anticipate, you start to build a bridge. Now, it can be an idle daydream, which in which it's more like the dog chasing its tail, going nowhere, or if it's a properly constructed meditation and visualization, you're driving these threads, these geometric forms, color, light, sound, up to the next higher level. So thank you, Nisa. That was excellent. Okay, Joe, you're on.
I'm going to flip the coin.
Okay, good.
I'm thinking back to being a very young child, and the only sound impact that we got or imagery that we got was by sitting and listening to the radio and imagining what that clip clock meant. When Tonto was following the Lone Ranger, we didn't have
Love
any
it.
pictures. We had to create it in our mind. But I want to go back even farther. I'm thinking about the very young child who's starting out on the path today. And it's incredibly important that we find a way to underscore the importance of imagination. I'm thinking that as a child, I sat in the backyard. There was no grass, and I played with little patties of mud, and I certainly made a lot of ideas from playing with that mud. I played with bugs, I played with water.
Excellent.
And all of that I'm leading you into is that by the time I got to be about 12, I didn't like to go to sleep at 8 o'clock when it was bedtime. So I talked to myself, and literally, I talked to myself for more than a decade. And I'm recognizing now in old age that what I was doing was creating a variety of pathways that I could follow. And I could say, what if, what if, what if? And I created by imagination, which later led to the opening of the Antarkarana. Then we can go
Excellent.
on to what we're talking about in terms of opening to the fractals of the higher mind. It's an amazing trip, but it starts from the very beginning, and I don't think we should overlook that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you make an excellent point. I love that. Pathways that you could follow. And it reminds me of the concept that we tread upon the path because we are the path. It's not outside of us. And that's another paradox. We want to disassociate from the personality, but it's actually the redeemed, the elevated personality that is receiving the gift. The soul on its own plane has chosen to be a sacrificial light in our lives. But we need to grounded in our personalities and have it become unconscious. But the unconscious doesn't mean it's not there. It means, like you have eloquently shared, like breathing, it's such a part of you that you don't have to focus a lot of attention on it. And this is also what the Tibetan meant by a base note, that your personality, or let's say your physical body, astral body, mental body, they have a note. And they'll always be sounding out. They'll be sounding out because they're becoming purer. They're becoming more advanced. But in relationship to the soul, they are the lesser notes. Thank you, Joe. Excellent. Okay. Any additional comments before we go on?
I don't think so. I thought I saw another hand, but I guess it went down.
Anyway, I want
there,
to...
it just went up.
Okay.
Or a hand went up. Barbara, go ahead.
Yes. So the Aquarian age is already here and is alive in the upper Buddhic planes. It is obviously written in light, sound, geometry, angles, movement. But it is having a tremendous magnetic force. So it's we're already in the future. So I think that that evolution, particularly on the upward form, pulls us upward. It isn't just neutral. It is attracting us and really making this upward movement possible. So I think we need to just trust that we have to do our part, but that we are very lovingly being carried higher. So it's happening at the same time of great chaos. And so the story is both. It's both the great chaos and that the future has arrived and is speaking to us. So I think that we live with a new era of complexity that maybe has never been quite as complex as it is now. But I think that we can trust that that there are that the combination of all of these seven ray factors and fifth ray factors is powerful, and it's creating a reality. Thank you.
Excellent, Barbara. Thank you. Some very deep insights you have shared, and I agree. To those who have done the preparatory work, the Buddhic plane or planes, because there's seven of them, seven subplanes, they're already here. The soul ray of humanity is the fourth ray, which is Budai. And if you can connect into the heart of humanity and bypass all of the flaws and idiosyncrasies and limitations, you can share in that beautiful revelation. And one of the things that has been impressed upon me studying the Ageless Wisdom teachings is that the energies become more powerful as you ascend the bridge that you're building, and the complexity dissipates. All the different parts that make up who we are, they all coalesce together, and we can share in that. So thank you very much, Barbara. That was excellent. Okay, so I wanted to point out how the triangle becomes a vortex. And I've done this many times, and I apologize, but it's such a key insight to what we're going to share next. We're going to actually go into the planets and their unique gyrations, revolutions, elliptical patterns. And the vortex is created because a triangle, which is the initial start of the vortex, has each point of its triangle seated on a different level. So, in other words, when you do your triangle work between your group brothers and sisters, you're actually sending energy. Yes, we can say love, intelligence, will, or any other quality, but all three will not be situated exactly on the same level. One may be more Buddhic, one may be more monastic, another may be more will-orientated. So when you take three points of a triangle and energy begins to rotate around them, and that progression matures, it creates a quick flashing type motion as the energy goes from point to point to point. And then it creates a vortex. And the vortex is now the three different points created into more of an organic structure, one that can breathe in and out, one that can be composed of, in the early stages, a few energies, but later it can be many energies. And if you look at this vortex right in front of you, you can see how we, as members of a group or a number of groups, can be one of these key supporting triangles. And they're all at slightly different positions to each other, but they all fit together into this grand mosaic that is exquisite, and it's like a trumpet. And the greater organism, it breathes in and out. Not so much as we understand the term, although there is a relationship between human breath and cosmic breath when you get into advanced breathing exercises. This is the mosaic right here, and how triangles can create a vortex. Okay, excellent. With that preparatory statement, let's move into some really amazing animations. Now, I just want to say that when we view the orbits of certain planets that are coming up in a few more slides, we need to keep into consideration that the planets do not rotate in perfect circular uniform fashion. They're more elliptical. Planets also can go retrograde. So when you look at the movement of these different patterns that the planets make around the sun or around each other, there's going to be, you have to take into consideration that these are important visual approximations of their geometric movements. And this little video explains it. Excellent. How many here have sailed or ridden in a motorboat? And I'm sure it's probably everyone, and marveled at the wake, the way the boat plows through the water, and you get these subsidiary spirals or vortices that form on either side of the boat. And to create a perhaps a very inept analogy, but one that can be useful for all of its limitation, imagine that all these planets that you just saw spiraling in the vortex with the previous video, it's a magnetic wake. It's gravity partially, but it's also on the inner planes. It's the draw of plasma between all the different planets. And that's what we're going to explore next week in greater detail. And we're just laying the foundation right now to get into what Alice Bailey calls the greatest science that humanity is just beginning to discover in the world. This is a direct quote, and that is the science of electricity. And that the Christ, who returns with hosts of angels and devas for the upliftment and the purification of the planet, these devas and angels are electrical and magnetic in nature. And that when you know their signatures, when you know their geometry, their color, their notes, their sounds, it will facilitate that connection that the Christ is trying to make with all advanced disciples and initiates at this time historically to do not just goodwill and right human relations and triangles on a very basic rudimentary level, but just calling in these redemptive forces that the Christ wields in very powerful ways. So keep that in mind. So let me read a few of the technical things we're going to deal with here. We're going to do a video on the Earth-Venus dance or relationship, and it's all based on triangles. And the comment goes, take the orbits of any two planets and draw a line between the two planets' positions every few days. Because the inner planet orbits faster than the outer planet, interesting patterns evolve. Each planetary pairing has its own unique dance rhythm. For example, the Earth-Venus dance returns to the original starting position after 8 Earth years. 8 Earth years equals 13 Venus years. Note that 8 and 13 are members of the Fibonacci number series. And it's shared here that the Earth 8 years has so many days and years that equals so many days, then Venus has 13 years. So it's sort of laid out with us. And also pay attention to the dance of 8 years. It creates this beautiful five-petal flower with the sun at the center. And five is not only another Fibonacci number, but it's one of the foundational symbols, glyphs of all white magic, alchemy, and transmutation, which is deserving of a whole presentation just in itself. So, again, we're going to use these animations as little mini meditations. And even though they may not take into consideration some of the subtleties that we as a developing and studying esoteric astrologers, it does give us a correspondence and an image to see the rare beauty. Let me share a few insights from DK, or actually, these are more from The Secret Doctrine, Helena Blavatsky, on the importance of the Earth and Venus bond. Light comes through Venus, who receives a triple supply and gives one third to the Earth. Therefore, the two are called twin sisters, which is an interesting statement because often the Earth is considered male and Venus female. And this is explained a little bit in the next few statements. Venus is the most occult, powerful, and mysterious of all the planets. Its relationship with the Earth is the most prominent. It presides over the natural generation of men. It is called the other sun. It is the Earth's primary or spiritual prototype. And as we're going to see, Venus is basically astrologically related to ray 2 and 5, but it also has a fourth ray connection. And we'll be exploring that slightly. So the intimacy between Earth and the Venus bond is very powerful, and that's what we just saw visually. Now, we're going to point out, and the next image is going to be for meditative process for anyone who wants to capture it at some future point. Anyway, from the next image, we can clearly discern a five-pointed star emerging from the progressive series of triangulations of the Earth and Venus as they orbit the Sun. If this progressive series of triangles were animated and viewed in fourth dimension, we could also sense the rudimentary emergence or idea of the vortex and the sphere, and not just a number of single or separate geometric triangles. Okay, so I'm going to just skip some of this and jump right into it. Okay, this is an ex we just saw this, but it's done up slightly differently, and it's the Earth-Venus relationship creating the five-pointed star with the different petal formations. And look at the triangle relationships. And think of your initiation into Venusian Buddhic energy as well as second ray energy, because Budai is an extension of the second ray, and it usually blossoms forth long before the purity of the second ray, which is very, very advanced. In fact, you have to be a sixth degree initiate to fully understand the second ray, and a fourth degree initiate to understand Budai, just to show you how powerfully exquisite these rays are. So imagine yourself coming in to this mosaic, which is really a vortex, but as we showed earlier, a vortex can be made up of many layers and degrees of triangles, and we are individually and as a group working our way towards the center of the Venusian energy system, that the Venusian souls that overshadowed humanity, and I suspect there are others that came from the heart of the sun or maybe other planets, that this is part of the great sacrifice for them, that paradoxically, the soul on its own plane, and Venus certainly has a lot more advanced souls than we do down here, they lessen their light to a small degree to create or overshadow, I should say, the human system and all of us, and that when we become aware of their full power and light, the Venusian system, which really activates the Ajna center in our physiology, or I should say psychic centers, then we see through their eyes. And then at the end of incarnation or at the third initiation, what happens is the solar angel is no longer needed, which was borrowed, you might say, from Venus or the heart of the sun. And the Tibetan says several things, as well as Blavatsky. It says the causal body is destroyed. And in other places, it says the solar angel is no longer the intermediary, and it goes back from where it was originally taken. So you can think about those two concepts, because they're not contradictory, but they are slightly different. But what happens, and this is really the point I'm trying to make, through the law of sacrifice, the solar angel on its own plane, let's say that is from the Earth, excuse me, from the Venusian scheme or the esoteric part of that planet, it now has increased light. Now think about that. Imagine planting a rose bush and all you get is a lot of prickly branches up top there, but those roots of the rose, they sink deep into the earth and they draw sustenance. And that sustenance is the very thing that causes the blossoming of the roses at the top. Well, isn't that a similar mystery, a parallel, however crude, that I've made? This is what the solar angel does. It sends down these tendrils, which are like roots and have often been compared in the esoteric teachings as an inverted tree with the flowers above and the roots below. And when we gain through service and living and study and meditation and working in groups, just being a good person, doing what we were taught to do in kindergarten, all this is taking place organically and automatically, as Barbara eloquently shared earlier. So if you ever want to download this, this is not an original of mine. It can be, I don't know if it can be captured in the chat, Michael or BL, but it will be available in Makara. So now let's go to another geometric form, which is Jupiter, the Earth, and Mercury as they go around the sun. And again, use it as a little mini meditation. Not how long you meditate that always determines the success of a meditation, but the focus and the intensity. Excellent. And that's the link if anybody is interested in seeing other animations that this group or person made. We have to also keep into consideration that the size of the planets are not drawn to scale. It would be probably too difficult to do in these simple animations. Anyone like to make any comments?
I did post that image in the link, and I'll look for
Excellent.
and see if I can find the planetary what's it called? The planetary system, I think, is what it's called. They have some wonderful dynamics and graphics and stuff. You know what I'm talking about, Dwayne.
Yes, I recall you gave a presentation that was absolutely fabulous, and we
Well,
might
this was
watch
an
that sometime.
Antonia Nobilia,
Yes.
her stuff. So let me see if I can find
Yes.
that link and put it in the chat.
So what we're seeing. Oh, Joe, okay, you're on.
Well, I'm only beginning. I can speak a longer piece here. I've worked with the Venus chart for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. It occurs to me that if one looks at two triangles, the upper triangle and the lower triangle, that we could be doing that with the Venus to begin with. And now I'm extrapolating to the awareness that Neptune has a much, much longer cycle. And therefore, the way that this worked for Venus is going to work for Neptune, but it's going to take us way out into the cosmos.
Excellent. Well, that's a good insight. And I'm not sure if I have Neptune in my next animation, but that's a good insight to keep in mind. Let's just see. This is Mercury and the Earth. So take a deep breath and really penetrate into that golden yellow light, that redemptive heart energy and fire. And see it not only just sweeping your individual bodies and centers, but also moving out through your groups into the world, that beautiful Buddhic energy. I'm reminded of Michael Robbins' exquisite choice for the name of his books that he wrote, Tapestry of the Gods, because it is sort of like needlepoint. And it reminds me when I was traveling out west when I was younger, I stopped at some historical place where they had the reproduction of all the old farmers' tools, and then you could go into where the wife was at her loom or her spinning wheel. And I just happened to walk into the room at the right angle, and the sunlight was beaming off the wheel as she was spinning it manually, to make thread. And I've often thought the hum of that wheel was very hypnotic, as well as the sunlight flipping off the spokes. And it occurred to me that needlepoint work, and I may not be choosing the right words here, but I used to see my grandmother always knitting and creating these really beautiful patterns, but it never occurred to me that maybe this was a meditative thing for her. And because I used to say, how can anybody sit in a little rocking chair for half the day just doing this sort of mindless thing? Just show you where my head was at. And precisely, she had learned the technique maybe from her grandmother how to get into the mindless state in her unique way. And people might say, oh, well, that's just daydreaming, but it may be far deeper and more profound. Little simple things that we do, little chores that we do every day, make them into something rhythmic. Okay, any comments on that last one?
Yes,
Okay,
hold on
let's.
just one, hold on just one
Yes.
second. I'm trying to paste in the Tapestry of the God
You
PDF.
take all your time.
Okay, there were a couple. Oh, Diana says, I wonder about the resonances between these planetary macrocosmic dances and those of our organism microcosmic.
Well, that's the whole purpose of the occult path, is to know the links between the highest and the lowest. And for those who want to sort of dig into this a little deeper, I have taken a lot of what Blavatsky and Dvalin Kuhl have said on color and sound, and put it in little tabulations in several of my commentaries you'll find at my Lightweaver site. And if you want to understand the importance of the rays and their differentiation between the planes, that's where you'll find another commentary, the rays and the planes, their colors. Because these are living entities, these are the building blocks. And as Diana has suggested, building the bridge between those is what creates initiation, is what creates liberation, either to the individual cell found in your hand, or your entire personality, or soul, or a group. They're all struggling for more light. Even the masters, not struggling as we understand, but attempting to take over new and greater vistas of color, sound, geometry, light, vibration. And so we follow in their footsteps. They leave hints. And all this stuff that we're studying here is like a roadmap, not anything that I suddenly realized was the way out. No, it was from studying all these great thinkers and masters and, yeah, stepping it down, putting in my two cents worth, so to speak. But as Rumi said, if you want to find the way out, find someone who's just come back. And I realize that's sort of might be leaving a few people here hanging, but what he was referring to is if somebody has made a trip between California and Boston, Massachusetts, and they mapped it out because they've been on that trip so many times, and every 100 miles is like a subplane or it's like an initiation, well, what do you want to do? You can figure out yourself, but it's going to take longer. But if you listen to those who have been there and they're speaking with authority and they're giving you the tools you need, we need to humble ourselves to listen. Okay, excellent. Any other comments as we
Yes.
go to. Okay, good.
Suzanne says the planetary system, Antonio Novello, She says it's out of Italy, yes. Antonia is stunning, poetically, beautifully presented every month or more. Highly recommended. And she has given several presentations over the last 3 or 4 years that are available from the conference videos. She's just outstanding what they're doing with the planetary system and everything. And getting back to what Diana said, it's recognizing and resonating with the music of the spheres. Not only can we see these beautiful visuals of these planets interacting, they have the sounds and stuff that come from it. And I think that's what you were talking about in my presentation. I did one on the
Yes.
sounds of NASA, where they actually had the sounds of the
Excellent.
planets as the Voyager or whatever it was went past them. So anyway, it's all awakening to and becoming responsive to and the sensitiveness of everything around us, whether it's that macrocosm or the microcosm that Diana was talking about.
It's through the law of analogy and the law of correspondences that the greater is linked with the lower, and the lower becomes eventually aware of the greater. And the greater has its signature in the lesser. It's just that the lesser is just not aware of it. So what we're studying here is the prototypes, the bridges in a very diminished form. But the second ray types have many talents. All the ray types have talents, but the second ray has the unique ability to take something that they can see visually and close their eyes and duplicate it. Now, it may not be in the early stages fully graphic in all of its minutiae, but the thing is, when they are able to build energy follows thought, that image, what has now happened. And this is what everybody should be doing here, and I don't mention it enough, is that then you take it, you're starting to take it to the mental plane. When you see it physically, it's just physiology. It's just a natural, organic thing. But the moment you start to focus on it with, like, you either superimpose on the next higher level, which is the high astral and the mental plane, that same image, you have created a bridge. That bridge may be tenuous, it may be very fine, but it's a bridge. And every time you meditate on that, you widen the bridge, you strengthen it, and occultly, according to H.P. Blavatsky, if you do the work correctly, you can symbolically step out of the personality and step into what you've created. And yet, to go back to paradoxes, what you've actually done is not, in a sense, created something. You have aligned with something that's already there, but it required you to come halfway. It required to you to knock on the door. To say in simple human terms, I'm here. My intention is good. I want to serve. Empower me. Fill me with your joy, your beauty, your light. And that higher entity, whether it's the master or the soul on its own plane, by law, will respond. Not, oh, she hasn't been very nice or he's done a few bad things last week. No. That is an occult truism. It's the basis of the new Aquarian superhuman physics. It's not wanting, it's not hoping, it's creating through the power of visualization. And DK has a whole section in Cosmic Fire and throughout all of his books, the importance of the new power of visualization. That's going to be a part of the new teachings. Is not just a random nilly-willy, you let it float in and you let it float out. And that's not a bad thing. I do that all the time as an artist. But the ability to focus without straining, and that's probably the hardest thing for people to learn at a certain point, that visualizing something is a dance. You have to project a certain geometric form, color, image, but if you push too hard, it will fatigue you. It will actually give you a headache. So you learn the difference between visualizing just enough to attract the attention of some higher force and then making the lower mind quiescent as the soul or these higher energies, they literally pull you up through the vortex. And this is why we're going to go into magnetism and electricity in our next presentation in much greater detail than what we've touched on before, because it's all about magnetics and electricity. We are prisoners of the planet as long as our personalities and the threefold vehicles are dominant. The moment, and that's magnetism, that's the earth pinning us down with its magnetism. And you and I would no more expect a rock we throw in the air to suddenly keep going up than anything. However, if the visualization is done properly over a certain amount of time, everything that seems heavy and inert and holding you down now begins to float upward, because there's another type of electricity, which is Fohat, cosmic electricity, working through the monadic level, working through the soul. It literally pulls you right up and out of the restrictions, out of what the Buddhists call the death. Being incarnation is like a death. But we do understand it has a purpose. It's not a death in that, oh, that's it. It's a waste of time. I just want to check out. No, it has a purpose. It has its place. And you will be, as time goes by, introduced more and more. And you already are. You wouldn't even be a part of what we're doing here now. And one other footnote I want to add that I forgot, and it's sort of off the subject, but Rose and I have purchased 58 acres in the Tahoe National Forest. It's very private, very secluded, quiet. You can go out at night and look up, and the stars are, there's no light pollution, are so brilliant. You feel like you could almost touch them. And we want to build a community center there and have retreats. And we will have at the top of the main building, we will have an observatory where we have a telescope and people can see what their rising sign, the constellation their rising sign is. And that's part of the earlier outline that I gave that I forgot to mention, that the Tibetan says in these teachings, of which I very superficially presented today, and I apologize for that, that you look at the star at night and you visualize the energy coming from that constellation right down monadically through your soul body, right down through into your personality. And this is one of our goals, pragmatically, to offer as a gift to this group, should people want to come out in maybe a year or so when we get it a little further developed, because we have a long way to go. But I just wanted to mention that because this is the long-term goal of a lot of the things that we're discussing. And anyway, good. So, any additional comments or statements? as we move a little further on. Go to our next one. The next one is Jupiter, Mars, and Earth. Okay,
No,
we'll
other
jump.
than Susie says Antonia is starting a new series that one can sign up for on the Muses.
Could you put that in the chat? Because she has done
It's
marvelous work, and I've seen her at conferences, and I am not on her direct link, and I would like to be. So please put that in the chat. Yeah, she does great work. The Italian groups, there's going to be an esoteric group emerging, and I feel she's a part of it along with others.
So, Susie, I
Beautiful
hope you
soul.
can find that link and put it in the chat for us. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll be here for another 20 minutes, so don't stress trying to locate it. Francis, you got something to share, please.
Well, I have an observation thought I wanted to present with you, and that is you mentioned magnetism. And I think we can all agree that the opposites that we're experiencing individually in countries on the planet are at extremes right now on the many planes that we exist on. And it was the Master Art through the Lucille Cedarcrans writings who said that this has taken place in history in the past, and when the opposites reach such an extreme, and somebody brought up the opposites earlier, I think, in a comment here. When they reach such an extreme, they can snap back to the middle quite quickly, relatively speaking. And I was just wondering, and my thought was that at the middle is a balance point, and we are now graced this cycle with the avatar synthesis. And when you mentioned magnetism, my impression has been that the avatar energy is at that balance point, and it is magnetizing the attraction and to all the levels of humanity to bring it back in even a more quicker sequence, so to speak. And I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about the energy of the avatar synthesis and what's taking place in our polar extremes at this point in time.
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think that as Socrates or Plato once said, if you frame a question adequately, you're already halfway towards its solution. And this is excellent, Francis. A balance point, and the avatar of synthesis can come no longer than the any. No lower
Lower than the,
than the mental plane.
yeah.
However, there are other groups of avatars that pick up where this great avatar leaves off,
Yep.
becomes a distribution centers, and bring it right down onto the mundane level, which is where it's needed, because we do have this polarity that is just. It's just wiping people out. And yet, it may be necessary for these extremes to come back to, like you say, Francis, a realistic balance point. You know, when you see two political groups interface with each other, you know exactly what I'm referring to when I say that they both exaggerate. They both find fault with the other political party, and they need to snap back into the best of both of them, in which something good can emerge. And I think far beyond just the political situation, it's happening on the whole planet that these avatars, and there's a number of them, they're not always named, these great hierarchical beings that are guiding our evolution, they're pouring down such potent energy and force. If there aren't certain difficulties and discomforts that you're experiencing right now, then you are very, very advanced. And my hat is tipped to you because there's a lot of stuff going on, but out of that emerges, as Barbara said earlier, the Buddhic, which is, and that's the ultimate goal of the Buddhic plane. We say the fourth ray harmony through conflict, but eventually you get tired of the conflict. You get tired of the drama. You say, look, my energy is more important than investing in what I think is the truth or somebody doing this or that or whatever. You move into the heart, you send it to everyone, and you elevate them, even if it antagonizes them in the early stages. Okay,
Well,
excellent.
just real
Thank
quick,
you.
you mentioned the Buddhic, of course, and of course the politics, and of course the negative polarization is domination right now, unfortunately. But at that balance point, I believe, is it not true that the synthesis brings forward the overall synthesis and balance and transcends those opposites, and the Buddhi is what the Buddha tells us, to observe and to become aware and to rise above on the Buddhic.
Yes, this is a good point, that the synthesis brings together the best of both, but then it takes it to an even higher level of pure synthesis. And with the Buddhic plane, it's pure unconditional love. Thank you, Francis. Okay, so let's do one more animation, looking at it as a meditation. Mars and Earth. As we discussed earlier, even though Venus is normally associated with rays 2 and 5, active intelligence and the second ray of love wisdom, we can read down here, and I won't read all of it because we've sort of covered it. DK says its radiation includes the Buddhic plane as far as its humanity are concerned. So that's why it is so important. Okay, now electrically, this is what the quantum world looks like. This may be from NASA. And what it does is it demonstrates the relationship between Venus and the Earth electrically. These striations are plasma waves, and they exist on different levels. So there's even like a physical correspondence. Notice it creates like a figure eight. Well, a figure eight, according to the Tibetan, is a very powerful symbol because it symbols synthesis. And it occurred to me when I was looking at this that the permanent atom of the Buddhic plane is a figure eight, just as the astral plane is more like a heart with a depression at the top where energy circulates and then emerges at the bottom. And I've shared that many times with the group, the divine Anu or Babbitt permanent atom. all in motion. So what we're going to do as another visualization is to take this, what is also called the lemonscape, or there's several names for this figure. It's not just called a figure eight, it's called a it evades me. And it's just energy that loops back upon itself. In other words, it's continuously going and flowing because it's really two vortices. So keep that in mind as you view the next image, because the next image is very similar to the one you're looking at now, only it's in motion. When the image is animated, it reminds me of the statement by the Tibetan where he says, energy emerges out of itself, that it comes from a place, an abode, a level that's so obscure and so high, all we can see is its effect on matter, on us. And to see two energies folding back upon itself in this figure eight, even though this is slightly different, it does convey that sense of fourth dimension. And that's the purpose of all of these instructions. However far afield I often get with technicalities, it's to have a good mental base to launch into that intuition, the higher mind, and then the pure intuition. Because these are not symbols that they could be used for entertainment, but they are really hierarchical in their impact. If the interior focus is powerful enough. Okay, so let's go to Earth, Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus. Any comments?
Yes, we have a couple. Susie says, does the a lemon anyway, does the
Lemonscape, lemonscape.
yeah, does that also have properties of the eight, but in a different manner? And then Louise says it's the infinity symbol.
The infinity symbol. Thank you. Yes, but it's also called the lemonscape.
Okay. And I just wanted to say that of all of the music that attached to all of this, the Earth, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus one seemed to me to be more clashing
Yes.
and less soothing.
Yes. These should have symphonic, classical, really high quality. And I apologize for that. And I was just going to do the visual and remove the auditory, but you can see I didn't get to it. So.
But
Yes,
that
because
also
the.
reminds me of the NASA sounds of the planets because they were jarring. They weren't
Yes, they weren't melodious.
exactly.
I agree. I am in total agreement.
And Janet said this reminded her of the 12-petal lotus.
Well, isn't that given by the Tibetan that our solar system is a 12-petal lotus? So they all have their own geometry. And again, I'm sure these are not entirely astrologically accurate, obviously, but it gives us a sense of the macrocosm, and that these great beings who live outside of time, as we understand the term, they may see these geometric forms entirely differently. I do also recall the Tibetans saying that the masters can look into the auric field of the student and see exactly where they are by the coloring, the sound, and the geometry. They don't have to sit them down and ask a lot of questions. They see right into them, right into their core. Okay, I'm going to share one more slide. No, any,
Susie
go
also
ahead.
says Holst's Symphony the Planets is interesting to meditate to. He did a whole symphony for
Yes.
each of the planets.
Yes, absolutely.
And Sanjay says how awakening the higher mind is achieved by this, or how is awakening the higher mind achieved by this geometry?
By finding those geometric forms that you feel more comfortable with and could potentially represent your inner psychic centers or vehicles or rays, and then use it as a point of focus. You build every time you focus on it and bring it up to the high mental plane. All symbols have to be seen or created inside the mind's eye, either by looking at something or just creating it if they can do that. A lot of second-ray people can. A lot of third-ray people need something to look at. If I say a vortex, they would prefer that I show what a vortex looks like. It's all about building. We are the builders of the dawn. Okay, any final concluding comments or shares before I close with another little mini meditation? And the reason why this next image is very interesting is that this is something I got off the internet. And there's many things like this. In other words, what you've just been exposed to is really, in a way, nothing new. You can see it, variations of it. When you go in and you get up on the information highway. But what I'm attempting to do here is to give it a little more esoteric base. But I like this little video we're about to see because it has a very contemporary language. It's a fusion of contemporary language and the ancient yogic tradition language. And it's very seamless and it's shared. And it flows so beautifully. So let me conclude today's presentation with this animation.
Beyond spoken or telepathic communication is geometric light language. This is the native language of the cosmos. It is the instantaneous transmission of vast, holistic concepts through complex, evolving geometric forms of light. An entire philosophical system can be conveyed in a single, beautiful, rotating, crystalline structure that is seen or felt by the inner senses. This is how the architects of the universe designed reality blueprints. Becoming fluent in this language is a key aspect of mastering higher consciousness, as it allows you to receive and transmit pure, undistorted information directly from source.
Undistorted information directly from source. Well, I would say that's a pretty powerful statement considering we're bombarded from every conceivable direction with misinformation. And if you don't have the right information, it can be a huge liability. Excellent. Any last comments before we close? I appreciate your attendance. Your patience, your contribution, and the loving synthesis that you create and the mental telepathic field that you create by your presence.
Janet is looking for the link for the Earth, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus video, and Michael Crow is pulling those up, and then and Veronica would like the last video to know where that came from. But remember, we'll always put the videos in there with the recordings and with the chat. Okay. Anna says these astrological entities hold the keys to strengthening our soul's foundation. Our psyche is mapped out in the solar system and all the material in it. The magnetic fields of physical bodies within the solar system are comparable to our human body aura, and they are part of the whole psychic body or multidimensional properties of each planet. In terms of astrology and our psyche bodies, what happens when we integrate our comprehension that planets do not make us do anything? It is the chemistry or alchemy between energy fields within our greater selves that spark influences. We do it to ourselves. No one and nothing is doing it to us. We only have to grow to understand this network of consciousness.
Beautifully shared, Anna. Very poetic, as well as occultly accurate and invocative. We're not really made to do anything. That the map is already created, and we're trying to wind our way back to something that's already there. Again, another paradox. I am not. Bringing those two together into total fusion. So, if there aren't any additional comments, we will
Yes,
close.
we have a hand up, but I just want to say, add to what Anna said. You know, the planets don't impel. It's energy, and we have to learn to use it, and that's part of why it's in our horoscope. But once we learn to use that energy, we need to balance it with everything else that we're doing. So, thank you, Michael, for putting the Earth, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus link there. Okay, and Veronica, you wanted to say something?
Hello, can you hear me?
We
Yes.
can.
I want to share something. I'm doing this meditation that has to do with alignment with one of my groups. And it says at some point that dedicate the mind principle to the plan. And the last month, I have been visualizing myself and my group members that we are stepping on a mandala that is of indigo blue color, like the one, the last one that you show here. So you have
Yes.
given me a key because I was seeing this image, and I was wondering how can I understand what it means? How is the plan? How do we do the plan? Well, of course I can't understand it, but it was there.
Excellent, Veronica, and that is exactly the purpose of these presentations is to present keys. And Blavatsky eloquently shares this in The Secret Doctrine. She says that we will be given keys, and the keys are given by the masters and the initiates and the guides, and but only we can turn the keys. So if you find something that attracts your attention with unusual grace or unusual power, you should follow that back, and use some of these images, some of these symbols in meditation, because they're very hierarchical. Okay, thank you all, and send the light and love, and appreciate your participation.